deaths of David Palmer, Tony Almeida, and Michelle Desler. They were friends of mine.
That's the way it works.
Jack, Logan doesn't confess. How far are you actually willing to go?
As far as I have to.
Welcome to 24 Under Review, your one-stop shop for all things 24.
Now, let's rejoin our regularly scheduled podcast.
Previously on 24.
Well, there's a lot previously on 24 because it's been 2 weeks since the podcast, but we will only do the previous line 24 from today's episode. First off, Jack gets a call from the Chinese official that was trying to get him actually 2 years ago in season four when he committed the crime at the consulate, and he has Otter. He wants an SB circuit board from the suitcase nuke, and Jack wants to do it. He convinces two army men standing near it, guarding the suitcase nuke, that he has orders to get the circuit board. When Doyle gets onto this, after Chloe admits to doing it, he is stopped. Then Jack calls Wayne and gets permission to do it, and he will not let it get to the Chinese hands no matter what, even if it costs him his life. And Wayne does sign off, mainly because he owes Jack for what Jack has done today. And the Russians, while not let that technology out, that is why it's such a big deal, because that little circuit board holds the key to Russian defense technology. Wayne Palmer is at a press conference, and he goes fine until he's on one of the what looks to be one of the last questions, where he starts to sputter for quite a bit, and then he just falls over. He evidently had a seizure, I believe they said it was. So Noah Daniels, who had his resignation in his hands, about to give it to Palmer after the press conference, it becomes the president. With that, Lisa brings him a little paper showing him that Palmer signed off on the Bauer plan, and then Noah cancels it because he's obviously a little ignorant in that subject and has no idea what they're going to do. They are en route to go and place the circuit board, or I guess exchange it, and they do have a tracker installed when Doyle receives orders to take Jack back to CTU immediately, and Jack catches on. And he takes the car, leaves Doyle out in a few miles away from the highway.
The following takes place between 12 a.m. and 1 a.m.
This episode starts off just as the last one ended, where Doyle running down to the road, which looks to be right next to the highway, to get a car from the any of the bypassers. He tries to stop the cars, and I think three of them drove by, and he finally got one, and he threw the guy out of the car and stole the car, at which point in time he used the man's cell phone to call CTU and tell them how he screwed up because Jack got away. He also asks Morris if the tracker is still on the board, and Morris tells him where Jack's location is, but tells him that Jack will ditch the tracker at his first possibility. And Doyle then promises he'll catch Jack before he takes off the tracking device. Buchanan announces to all the people on the CTU floor that Jack has gone rogue and that they're now going to convert basically all their resources to stopping him. And he asks Chloe, who had been taken off that mission earlier when she tried to help Jack get the board before he had permission from anyone. And she tells Bill that she can work on the task and be trusted to do what she is told and not do what is best for Jack. Jack pulls up underneath a set of power lines, and he removes the tracker. Morris is at CT when he loses a signal from the tracking device once Jack gets under the high voltage lines, which we later learn will supply basically the entire valley with power. So obviously those are going to be emitting just a little bit of interference. And then Doyle is called and told where the tracker was ditched so he can try and see if he can get any clues from there. Morris goes off to do I forget what, but then Milo asks Chloe if she thinks Jack would rather give up Audrey's life, would give up Audrey's life or turn over the circuit board, and she has no answer, which the answer there is he would give up the circuit board, because I don't know why, what his reasoning is behind making a World War III, but he would probably just give them the circuit board and take Audrey. The White House press secretary, Ellen Price, briefs the reporters that Wayne is being taken to the hospital and they don't know if he'll be in a coma for minutes, days, weeks, hours, or if he ever will come out of a coma before dying, and that Vice President Daniels will be addressing the nation at 9 a.m. Eastern. Back at the Oval Office, Daniels and Lennox have a little conversation that is not necessarily big news, but it does involve their little relationship quite a bit.
We need to clear the air, you and I. You still have evidence that hurt me, and I'd like to know what your intentions are.
Truthfully, sir, I haven't given it much thought.
Why don't you think about it now?
All right, sir. It concerns me that you engaged in conspiracy and perjury to achieve political ends. I don't think that's behavior befitting the acting president of the United States.
Tom, the world has changed in the last half hour. Right now, this country above all needs stability. If I'm brought up on charges in the first hours of this presidency, then America's left without elected leadership.
I might just complete my thought, sir. I made that tape both to back you off your challenge to President Palmer, but also to protect me. Now, that was and remains my only reason.
What about forcing my resignation?
It's Wayne Palmer's idea, not mine.
So, you're okay then with me in this chair?
Sir, it's no secret that policy-wise, you and I are in alignment. I just simply hate how we got here.
Now that we are here.
Yes, sir. You have my support.
In the event that we ever get out of alignment, I can't have you holding this evidence over my head.
It's understood, sir. You have my word.
All right, Tom. Glad to have you with me. Now, what do you suggest we do with Karen Hayes? Will she slow us down?
Well, of course she might, but she is smart and she brings balance.
Fine, then she stays.
May I let her know, sir?
Sure. Tom. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
So now all of their little earlier scuffles are now, we hope, will be healed. But we don't know. If Noah does some questionable things, Tom might have to use that evidence against him to make him make the right decision. And then back with Jack, he calls Chang, telling him that CTU is now looking for him, and since he knows CTU's satellite coverage, he will choose the location for the trade. Chang agrees they will go to a hotel up on, I believe it is the 305 freeway, and they don't give us a time frame, so really they're open for that, open in that sense, which kind of disappointed me, because I didn't know if the trade was going to go down this episode. I was pretty sure it would probably go down by 12:35, but I turned out to be wrong. And then back at the White House, Karen is trying to appeal for CTE's authority, and then Lennox offers to put all of the ancillary, can't pronounce that word, agencies in pursuit of Jack, and Daniels agrees. With everyone out of the Oval Office other than Lisa, he confesses to her that with all that is going on, he can't stop thinking about her, and they kiss. She goes home to pick up a change of clothes so she can spend the night with him, which is odd considering she probably won't be back to the White House till 1 or 1:30, so that's a little odd. Doyle pulls up near the power lines and he sees fresh tire tracks. Here's where it starts getting ridiculous, where the Jack is 8 miles ahead of Doyle, which that wasn't anywhere near 8 minutes, and considering they're traveling at 60 miles an hour, that's how long it would take for him to get the 8-mile lead. I would think it would be more like two or three miles. So, but that does actually set up the later half of the episode. And there's any cell phone transmissions, which he notes that one of them, that Jack could be using one he stole from the terrorists, or if there are any places that Jack might have stopped for the trade. Nadia and Chloe pull up anything from the area cell towers in the past few minutes, and then that takes a while, and Chloe sends it to Morris, who is annoyed that she had the information take over his screen without a warning, and he accuses her of being hostile, and they argue about who is to blame. And then Milo intercedes with their fight, and Chloe asks him for help instead of going to Morris. Morris becomes jealous of her, and then he takes some action later. And while they are trading little insults, she tells him that he is the one that armed a nuclear bomb for the terrorists, and then she realizes that that definitely hit home with him, and she apologizes, but Morris doesn't think that's, or he thinks that's the way he thinks of her after she says no. But that will change some stuff here. He will later go up and ask Bill to get him out of the comm division. Karen is warned that Peter Hawk from the Department of Justice is waiting in her office, and Lennox cautions her to tread lightly because Hawk has a clout on Capitol Hill. With that, Karen heads over to her office, and she is greeted by Hawk. He's the guy who has been interrogating Reed Pollock, who claims that Buchanan held Fyatt in custody and then let him go. Reed says that in the video that Karen covered this up with a blue coat at Homeland Security to protect her husband. Karen explains to him that Fyatt was apprehended in a border sweep 2 years ago, but there was not enough evidence to keep him, and besides, at that time, Fyatt was not considered a high-level threat. And it's also a standard practice to blue code these released people so that they do not have their freedoms stripped, and the only reason Karen resigned from the White House 12 hours ago instead of having come out is because she didn't want the information to be used against the president or her husband while the country was under attack. Hawk insists that someone will have to be blamed for the terrorist attacks, and he suggests that Buchanan take the fall because he is further down in the food chain from the president, yet Karen knows it will either be her head or Buchanan's head on the chopping block. And I found this all a little outlandish, because she could just defend him. There's no reason to resign. I mean, yeah, you'll take a little heat, and maybe then you'll have to resign, but at least try to defend yourself. And Jack finally arrives at the abandoned Calderon Hotel, and then at CTU, they intercept, and they do not yet have it unencrypted, but they do confirm that it that Doyle was right, I assume, by the location of the cell tower. And then Buchanan gets a call from Karen, who seems troubled. He says, or Buchanan tells her they're closing in on finding Jack, and he can't talk, and Karen asks him to call back when he is free. Karen goes to see Lennox, rationalizing that Reed is probably using anything he can to bargain his way out of the death penalty for treason, which is what he is currently looking at. And Hawk wants distance from the president, and he needs either Karen or Buchanan to be blamed, so Lennox says that Buchanan is already in the crosshairs and will ultimately be responsible because it is, of course, his signature on the release of Fayed. Karen considers resigning again, but Lennox advises her not to do that because she won't be able to save Buchanan, and why risk her job? And this is where I find it ridiculous, because Karen is, in fact, the one that covered it up. She mentions, and Hawk agrees, that what happened was legal. It's just her covering it up that it was questionable. Although it was still legal, it was questionable why she did that, considering it's her husband that did sign off on it. And back at the Calderon, Jack is planting C4 in the walls of the empty hotel. And then he calls Buchanan and tells us why, and he leaves a voicemail explaining that the circuit board will be incinerated in the explosion at the hotel, and Jack wants Buchanan to take care of Audrey if he doesn't make it out alive, which, looking at his little setup, he isn't likely to make it out alive. Morris then asks Buchanan to be transferred out of comm because he and Chloe are having problems, and Buchanan agrees to try to work out something that will work out best for everyone. Karen calls Buchanan again and tells him that the Department of Justice is, quote, out for blood. And then he also says, or she also says, quote, I can't let this touch me. And she explains about protecting the administration, and even though it was all by the book, they do want someone to blame. And her only option is to immediately fire Buchanan. And really, I don't see what's wrong with him resigning. He's like, you want me to resign? She's like, no, I'm going to fire you. So that seemed a little hostile. Buchanan is furious because he didn't do anything wrong, and he hangs up on her. She tries calling back, and he does not pick up. Doyle is checking surface streets for Jack, and suddenly he sees Jack's car parked near an abandoned building, and Buchanan summons Nadia to the conference room and informs her that he was just fired from CTU, and she will be taken over. She questions his decision, but ultimately he's the one who has the power, and I guess all that could happen is she could appoint someone else. And then he does not explain the circumstances. He says, quote, it's just politics. And then security comes in to escort him from the premises. Nadia announces to the staff that Buchanan has stepped down, and until Division can send a replacement, she will be the director of CTU. And back at the Calderon, with just 9 minutes left in the episode, Doyle takes his weapon and ammo from Jack's truck, and he radios CTU that a limousine has just pulled up and they should send support. A little late, don't you, wouldn't you say? I believe the support was already on the way earlier because he was saying, get it up here faster, we need it now. And then Doyle sees Chang come out of the limousine alone. He walks inside and asks Jack for the component. Jack really holds most of the cards because to the Chinese, that little circuit board is more valuable than the life. Jack refuses until he can see Audrey, and then Cheng has his men bring her in, and Doyle is continuing to tell CTU all of the developments. Audrey's mouth is gagged, and Jack removes it, tenderly touching her face for the first time in almost 2 years, and he apologizes to her. And then Jack instructs Cheng to have Audrey walk out alone away from the Chinese snipers across the bridge, which is 100 meters away. And last time I checked, snipers can usually go about 1,500 to 2,000 yards accurately. So not just out of range yet. She might be out of range of a pistol, which have an effective range of about 75 to 90 yards. And even assault rifles are accurate up for about 300 to 400 yards. So she's going to have to walk a long time to get out. And even then, they won't know how far away she is. So then Jack says once he knows she's safe, he will hand over the weapons circuit board. Outside the hotel, Doyle sees almost a dozen gunmen surrounding the building. And again, he questions Nadia about the field teams. And this will explain something a little bit later. Jack tells Audrey to go to a gas station nearby, and there will be a taxi that will pick her up and take her back to CTU. And Audrey leaves the building alone as the Chinese gunmen train their weapons on her. Doyle becomes impatient, and Nadia informs him that field team should be there any minute, but he needs to do something fast because Jack is about to hand over the circuit board. Jack gives Chang the component, and as he's about to detonate the C4, shots ring out outside. Doyle takes out one of the men, and Jack goes to return fire, but is hit in the chest of his flak jacket, which don't see that often. Suddenly, a CTU chopper and SWAT teams arrive and engage in a firestorm with the Chinese. Chang bolts from the hotel into one of his three Humvees, and they speed off into the night, accompanied by two of the... there's three in all. So there are two more, and the helicopter goes to follow them and is hit by a missile and spins out of control. And there was a little bit of questioning right here about the Hummers. I didn't see them pull up with the limo, but that would explain the 10 men, because you're not going to fit 10 fully armed men in a limo, at least not comfortably, and... It would just make sense to have your little Hummers. Obviously, they didn't have any weapons mounted on the outside, because that would be just a little bit suspicious driving down the highway with three black Hummers with guns mounted on the top. And then I watched the episode, and I did get that more than I did last night when I watched it originally. And with that, Chen gets away, and the... other two Hummers go in separate directions as a diversion. CTU agents apprehend Jack, who tells Doyle that it was all set to detonate the circuit board, and Doyle screwed it up by shooting. And then Jack thinks they have captured Chang, but then Doyle tells him they didn't. And Nadia radios Doyle that Chang was spotted in one of three Hummers that fled into the mountains north, and more choppers are on their way, and she orders Doyle to put Jack under arrest. Doyle puts Jack in handcuffs, at which point in time Jack says, quote, "I had this handled. Why the hell didn't you just listen to me?" And then Audrey is brought back to the hotel. She's mumbling the same phrase over and over again, "Help me, Jack. Please don't let them do this to me." And she realizes that she doesn't even recognize him, and the Chinese have done something to her, so Jack insists that Doyle help her. That's the episode in a nutshell, and more than a nutshell, that's pretty much a pretty good description of the episode. And we're running a little bit over usual time, which is about 20 minutes, and that's about it. So I will hopefully have the next five episodes for the rest of the season out on time. I'll try to get them out Monday or Tuesday or Wednesdays, just so that I don't forget about it and then have not enough time. And I am using a new program, Soundtrack 1.5, which I got with Final Cut Express. And this is a very nice program, so I don't know if there will really be any audio differences, but I do know it's very nice for video, which I don't plan on doing a video podcast anytime soon because of bandwidth constraints, time constraints, everything. But hopefully I will have those next five podcasts out, and until then, enjoy.